Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Graham Smith, professor of politics, University of Westminster, written a book and done a lot of research about something you called democratic innovations. What is that?
Okay, I use the term democratic innovations to capture a group of institutions that have been designed specifically to increase or deepen citizen participation in the political process.
Could you give us some example on these kind of innovations?
So there's lots of different ways that we can do participation, that we can engage citizens. And I'll just give you a couple of examples to give you the diversity. So one would be randomly selected bodies, which are often referred to as citizens' assemblies or citizens' juries, or there's deliberative opinion polls. And what they try to do is to bring a diverse group of citizens together to deliberate over a period of time on a particular issue. And they use random selection because if we just say anybody come, then you typically get a very biased group of people, a group of people who are typically white, middle class, older. And so what we do is you randomly select and stratify for particular characteristics to ensure that you get a diverse group of people. And just an example of that is at the moment the Citizens' Assembly in Ireland is running over a series of 16 months, over about 12 or 13 weekends. And they're looking at a series of constitutional issues and constitutional changes, the most controversial being the issue of abortion, and should they change the constitutional status of abortion in Ireland. Another example would be participatory budgeting in Latin America. And participatory budgeting has a different logic, and what it tries to do is to try and mobilise as many people as possible to discuss and to deliberate and to negotiate over a significant portion of the budget in the city. And what they've achieved through that is a reorientation of the budget towards poorer neighbourhoods. But the logic of that particular model is to try and get as many people, particularly from poorer neighbourhoods, engaged in making proposals, and then they select a group who decide what the priorities should be. But you know, you can do participation in different ways. And so what my work has been trying to do is to look at the democratic characteristics of those different ways of doing participation.
In the Western world, we have this sort of representative democratic system. Isn't that good enough? Why do we need this new innovation when it comes to democracy?
So there is an argument that that we've seen an explosion of these sorts of participatory processes and democratic innovations in response to various different crises of government, of governance and government. And so there are certain issues, for example, that politicians find it very difficult to deal with. And very often they'll want to, you know, involve citizens in that in order to legitimate action in that particular area. The Irish case is a really interesting case because the politicians really didn't want to deal with the issue of abortion. So they were willing to hand it over to a group of citizens to deal with. So that was an example where, if you like, the politicians felt that they didn't have the capacity to deal with that particular issue. There are other issues, for example, deciding on a new electoral system, where really you don't want politicians to decide on the system which will govern them. They've got too many interests. So very often, you know, it's been used in British Columbia, it's been used in Ontario and the Netherlands to think about what particular electoral system should be used in those jurisdictions. And there are other challenges or democratic deficits we're facing in relation to particular problems where actually the input of citizens is really needed, because they bring new information, they bring new ideas, but they, as I say, they also legitimate decisions. So there has been a sort of series of problems facing representative government, which has meant that they've looked to these participatory processes. Now, that isn't always, I don't always think that's a positive move, because sometimes they bring the public in to try and legitimate decisions that have already been made. And it's a kind of, if you like, it's a false form of participation. But there are plenty of examples to show that you can use these modes of participation to make really serious political decisions.
Also, there's a word called e-democracy, I mean, new technology, social media. What does that do for democratic? It seems like it could open up a lot of possibilities here.
I think we can see online developments going in two different directions. One is a kind of negative direction, which is polarization, people talking to people like themselves and being extremely rude to people who are unlike them. So, you know, we've seen that in the social media world in particular. There's also possibilities for developing online forms of engagement. We're seeing it with crowdsourcing software, the way that we can generate more ideas than we could have done through face-to-face. We're also thinking, seeing really interesting developments in terms of decision-making, in terms of electronic voting. The bit where we haven't seen the really strong development is where people can come and deliberate carefully and in an informed way about political issues. I talked earlier about the kind of citizens' assemblies where people come together for 3 or 4 days. It's kind of hard to manage a conversation of 40 to 50 people in a really constructive way online. And that's the real challenge, I think. So we can kind of do the idea generation and we can kind of make decisions. But where we're really having trouble at the moment, where we really need to see more development and more really interesting platforms is how do you support online deliberation that doesn't lead to polarization, but actually brings people together?
And what would you say is the key findings of your research? Do they work, these innovations?
The research findings are mixed. So sometimes they're designed very well. Let's take the case of participatory budgeting. In the cities where it was originally established, we were seeing millions of pounds worth of capital budget being distributed through a participatory process, which was leading to redistribution of goods in that city, redistribution of wealth in that city, in those cities. And that was happening in the early 1990s, so the 1990s and 2000s. The same idea of participatory budgeting has moved to Europe. But actually, realistically, all we're doing is giving a small pot of money to a poor community and saying, spend it how you like. And we're calling that participatory budgeting. They're really radically different things. In Brazil, it led to the restructuring of the state. It led to really massive infrastructure investments in health policy, in health infrastructure, and those sorts of things. It hasn't really done that in Europe. So I think partly that's to do with, you know, political leadership, willingness of political leaders to hand over power to citizens, and also the desire of civil society to sort of push for that power. So I think we can sometimes see the same, an institution which is called the same thing, operating in a different way in different places. And I think the real challenge for people like myself is to try and make sense of what works where. And an interesting development here, which some of your viewers might be interested in, is a website called Participedia, like Wikipedia, but Participedia. And that's a global platform where people like myself and my students and activists upload examples of participation from all over the world. And we're trying to collect those to answer the question you just asked, which was what works, where and why. And at the moment, we're only in the early stages of that.
So you don't have a favourite?
I have my own favourites, yeah. I have my favourites. I mean, I really like the citizens' assembly model. I think it's really fascinating the way that you can bring a diverse group of citizens together who would not normally have met. About 2 months ago, I ran a citizens' assembly on Brexit in the UK, a two-weekend assembly where we asked citizens, what kind of Brexit would you favour? Which is a question no one's asked in the UK. We voted to leave, but then what does leave mean? And I think I couldn't have done that in an open forum because you'd have just got sort of activists coming in and shouting at each other. So actually having a random selection of citizens who learned about the issue and then worked together over 2 weekends was a really interesting way to get a more informed opinion. So that's, you know, I really like that way of engaging.
When it comes to democratic system, one usually think about the referendum model, direct legislation that they have in Switzerland, of course. What's your view on that? Will we see more of that?
I think it has its place. You've just asked me about Brexit, so you know that's a very sensitive issue in the UK about the referendum. But that's a really interesting case. For me, the problem with a referendum is sometimes that very often people will vote and not necessarily be informed about the issue they're voting on. Now, for me, that doesn't mean that you don't hold referendums, but you need to prepare for the referendum. So I can't remember which state it is, but in the US, there's a state where they have a mini public. They have one of these randomly selected mini publics before they have a direct vote. And that mini public informs the electorate about what a group of citizens who have spent 4 days thinking about this think. So we shouldn't necessarily consider these innovations in isolation. They can actually work together to have a better democratic outcome. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. Of course it makes sense. But if you look into the future, what do you see happen when it comes to the democratic system? Will we see more of these innovation and in particular ones? What do you see coming?
It's a very interesting question because I think the kinds of problems that we're facing, in terms of the wicked problems like climate change, like dealing with social care and all these things, I think they really do require participatory processes to generate informed and legitimate decisions and to break political deadlocks. It takes a particular type of political leader to be willing to, I don't want to say give up power, but to engage citizens in that process. I suppose giving up power is fair enough sometimes. So we're looking, I think we need to be looking for a certain type of democratic leadership, and that emerges occasionally, but the kind of leadership we're seeing around the world at the moment, which says it speaks in the name of the people, but doesn't engage the people, I think is actually a worrying development. I think some of the kind of what some people refer to as populist developments sound participatory, but they're not. So there is another way of doing things. The question is, are there the kind of social movements who want to see that happen? You know, I'm an optimist on this, and mainly because I've seen these things work. And it is really trying to sort of persuade political leaders and political actors that this is a better way of doing democracy. So my hope is that, yeah, we can see more of these sorts of institutions in the future, and they're not just used to legitimate decisions that are already made, but they're being used in a really constructive and an imaginative way to sort of change the political landscape.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.